Back on the record, June 3rd, 2025, 245 Silver View Appeal. Ms. Clunchan is still in direct examination of Mr. Adams. All right, go ahead, Ms. Clunchan.
So we kind of addressed whether the deeper argument, right? And what was your conclusion about whether the building needs to go deeper?
With some design effort, the building would not have to go deeper, even with having a subterranean garage. Not subterranean, underbuilt garage.
Okay. So then the next argument that the applicant claims that underbuilding parking would require that the building would have to be larger, both taller and wider. What's your response?
Again, it's not true. It's an oversimplification where they are. It's a little. When you're designing something, there's a series of conclusions that they put in a brief, and it's pretty much impossible to describe a building in words, and describe the design process in words is even harder. But they simply go from, you know, suggestion A to suggestion B, suggestion C, therefore it doesn't work, and it's this linear arrangement of ideas. Where that's not how design works. You have suggestion A, and then you're like a tree. You know, you go off on one branch, and you have several branches to choose from. You can go this way or that way, and then they can then go on to the next branch, and they still have other options until you finally get out to the end, and there's the nut growing there, and that's your final design solution, if you will. They're not incorporating all the possibilities and all the permutations of, if they add a floor of parking, what does that mean for the width of the structure? They simply made the building wider, and that's what they showed in that exhibit that we had up previously, with the that I just didn't get to. I guess there's another example of that building width. Excuse me, exhibit that building width.
Yeah, I can share that exhibit again. So that is, we were on A8, exhibit A8, and then I'll share that. That I think what you're referring to is the diagram on PDF page 2. All right, is that accurate?
Yeah. So the again, this is a drawing. There's two sides of it. The left side is the applicant's exhibit. It's the same exhibit we referred to before, with the magenta outline or the pink outline showing the existing structure. Their proposed design. And they have drawn a black, heavier design, which simply appears to be. As if they put it on a photocopy machine and it just enlarged the magenta shape below. It's not how one designs. It's not a design solution. It's I don't know what it is. And they claim that I didn't understand this from this diagram, but they're claiming that this building that they're showing in the dark outline, which I have replicated in a dashed red outline on the right hand side, is the double loaded corridor scheme. And to perhaps put a finer point on that, the implication with the double loaded corridor scheme, for example, is that you might have a unit on one side of the upper floor. I'm drawing a pink rectangle at the upper left-hand corner of the applicant's design. And then you might have another unit on the other side of the building. So I'm drawing another rectangle on the upper right-hand side of the applicant's design. And between those two rectangles, there would be a hallway. And this is this quote-unquote double-loaded corridor scheme, where the corridor in the middle serves a unit on either side. Whereas in the previous scheme, as we all know, because we've been looking at it now since 2018, the building is one unit deep, and it's served by exterior stairs. So they've now put two units per floor versus one unit per floor, which means they can get the same number of units in just two floors. In fact, if they did this scheme, and I am highlighting I'm highlighting the lower two floors of that they have labeled R1 and R2 with a pink rectangle, you'll note that the lower two floors on top of the parking garage is lower overall than their current design, which is again outlined in the magenta line. So it's nonsensical. They're just, I can't tell if they're just adding, because they're adding more stories, I assume they were making all the units bigger when I wrote my notes on this diagram. Again, this diagram doesn't pass muster on analysis. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So
Okay.
no, the building does not need to be larger. It may need to be wider. You could configure it so it's taller. But you can squeeze the toothpaste into lots of different shapes. It's still the same volume of toothpaste.
Okay. And for this argument that it would need to be larger, tall, larger, wider, are there examples of where there are podiums where maybe the parking structure underneath is larger, but the building itself is not?
Yeah, it's very common, and I provided photographic samples, which we looked at. We started to look at yesterday.
Yeah. Okay. But I want you to, can we just revisit these? Can you tell us what where you
Yes.
got these examples, what are the site conditions, and what is this showing?
So again, these are really common constructions. In fact, they're so common, these are the two buildings that are next door to my office. And I didn't have to walk very far. My staff member and I walked out our front door and were immediately confronted with these two podium style buildings. The one that we're looking at right now is two doors down. It is an older construction, as Mr. Miller correctly guessed, and I would guess the same thing. It's probably built in the 80s or 90s. It simply shows how we have the larger parking garage, which we did talk about a bit yesterday. So the parking garage is basically this wide
Sorry, how wide are
underneath,
those?
and I'm highlighting kind of the, doing my best to draw kind of around this deeply shadowed area
Now,
with the pink
just
box.
for the record, because it's going to also, it'll be a transcript as well. Can you just describe what it is you're
Sure.
pointing to?
So what we see is a facade of, in this case, this end facade of the building is, it looks like three stories. There are three stacked windows with a solar fin on the outside for sun shading, and those three stories appear to be floating in this image, but they're actually over a structured parking garage that has an entry right here to the left of, I'm sorry, excuse me, to the right of the red dash box that I've drawn. That allows for double loaded parking, which is parking on either side of a drive aisle. I notice that the parking is accessed from the end of the building, not the side of the building, as the applicant has proposed. There's even parking right here, which I've highlighted at the red box and labeled parking garage, extends past the building above. It also extends past the building above, behind the telephone pole, and that's what this box is here. There's a patio for the use of these occupants over the parking garage, to the left of the three stories that are shown. So that's that image. And then the image below is the same building, looking at it from basically standing not too far past where the tree is on the upper image. And you can see that this is the roof of the parking garage. The parking garage edge in this case is, you can discern where it is by the change in the color of the concrete parking underneath the red car. It's a lighter colored concrete, and then immediately behind the red car, there's asphalt. So that asphalt is not over the parking garage. The parking garage also has a ventilation shaft that you can I've pointed to in this image. And then there's stairways that are stacked on top of the parking garage, and those stairways serve these balconies that front all the units here.
Okay. And then here we have this is exhibit A7, PDF page 2. What are we looking at here?
Yep, this is a actually it might be easier to explain it if you might go forward one more page, please. This building
Interesting.
is immediately to the left of the previous building. It shows 4 stories of residential over a single story of parking, and in this case, commercial. There's a key bank building. You can kind of vaguely see the white sign in the middle of the photograph on the right, which is the key bank building. It's key bank retail space. The entry to the parking is on the left side of this photograph, and in the middle bottom of the photograph on the left, it has the word parking over it for wayfinding. That parking garage is accessed from accesses the lower level of parking, and it is on the street frontage here. And then if you go back up one sheet, please. This is the same building from the uphill side. This is a fairly steep slope, or I would say very steeply slope. The slope across this site is an entire story and then some. So that allows for the upper. You see now that the residential structure looks like it's 3 stories. That's because one story has now been effectively buried in the slope. And this is parking on the upper level. So this is a second level of parking under the same building. And above, and there's the word parking again on the photograph on the lower left-hand side that indicates where one would drive into the upper level parking garage. And then you can see that on top of that parking garage, there is a courtyard, which is depicted in the photograph in the upper right. And I would also point out that on the both foot all these photographs, there's little to no resemblance of the shape in size, if you will, the floor plan size of the residential units in the residential building on top of the podium, on top of the parking structure. And there's obviously a functional circulation requirement, stairways and elevators and such connect, but there is not a simplistic notion that the shape of the building simply is extended down to the parking garage or vice versa. The shape of the parking garage is transcended straight up into the building above.
Okay. And so I think you provided a kind of some rough drawings that might show a similar type of scheme. So this is exhibit A8 at PDF page 3. Are you able to see the screen?
So and I'd like to go back. Does this have all of the diagrams, the original diagrams, showing their cross section?
Are you talking about up here? These?
Yes. So one thing I want to point out here is when I translated their magenta shape, and I can do this graphically, I simply took the width of the building that they proposed is their original design, and moved it over. Can I move it? I guess I can't move it. But the width of their building proposed is what I drew in gray on the right. So then, if you go to this scheme, the drawing that we were just looking at previously, now I've s simply translated that same shape. And you can see that the magenta line that's left on the screen is about the same length as the what I've labeled original scheme width. So the applicant has provided the width in this case, and so they're going to have to decide if their building's 36 feet wide or 45 feet or wide, whatever. If I simply take their exhibit at face value. The building appears to be 45 feet wide. So again, I don't know what to believe in their diagrams. They seem to be poorly executed or based on information that I don't have. It's a bit of a mystery. But if I simply accept that their building width at 45 feet for their first cross section, and assume that each story is 9 feet, which I have dimensioned on the right hand side of the diagram, and build a more modest 20-inch tall parapet, we can still get well under their big building envelope with four stories with a single loaded instead of a double loaded corridor scheme. Presumably the 45 is a single loaded corridor scheme. And there's, as the applicant themselves pointed out, there's room for an elevator and circulation in that, within that 45 feet. Could be exterior circulation, like we showed in that example of that building, but that's up to them to, you know, design something. The elevator fits is shown where it's labeled elevator pit located above line of axial impact on the lower right hand side. That there's plenty of room above the impact, either the impact zones the one I dispute or the one they provided, and the foundation for in this scheme gets you 56 cars at two levels of parking. The one thing I would point out is quite nice about this scheme versus the applicant scheme is when the applicant puts all of their building on grade, means all the car lights shine right into the windows of all those units when they're parked in the parking lot next to it. But we might get to that later.
Well, actually, yeah, I was about to get to that now. So that was one of the points that I believe it was Mr. Miller might have made, but basically saying that structured parking would create more visual car impacts for neighbors. Is that what is your response to that?
I just can't even begin to understand where that's coming from. Look, the whole idea that you have cars in a structure, and we can debate on how opaque or transparent that structure is, but the code for open parking garages requires some degree of open ventilation, as was pointed out. Let's just say that's 50%. I think it's actually closer to 60%, but let's just concede the point and say half the garage is open. That means half the garage is not open, and half the parking lights and the headlights from the cars and from the parking garage itself are screened from the surrounding area. Whereas 100% of the car's headlights and parking lights are unscreened and out in the open, causing impact, mostly causing impact to the residences of this actual site. Because the applicant points out, oh, we're screening the neighbors with a fence and trees. Well, if the screening for the fence and trees works for the open air parking lot, doesn't the screening for the fence and trees also work for the parking garage where the cars are already 50% screened, if not more? So it doesn't make sense to me. Okay. I'm sorry, someone want to step in?
No. And then what about the...
Well, I'm sorry, let me finish one last point then. There is a reason why the Silverdale Design Guide standards want the parking in structures, want parking behind the buildings, because they are in fact trying to actively screen parking from visual impact from the neighbors. So, and from other uses. In the surrounding any parking areas. So my point is the design guideline standards implicitly endorse structured parking is better for screening cars and headlights and all the impacts that cars create.
And in this podium design here, it would open up room for both patios for these units as well, right?
Correct. And on the left-hand side of the diagram, I suggest with there's some scale figure drawn of folks there, and the those from that floor can enjoy a patio there. Same thing on the other side of the building. Excuse me, in this case.
And also the podium doesn't necessarily have to be centered on this structured base, right? It could align with one side or the other to create larger patio.
Right. And then they could, if they wanted to, take advantage of some structural efficiencies. And again, they would have to design that. They could move the podium so it aligns with the right edge of, excuse me, align the building on top of the podium so it aligns with the right edge. And I've highlighted the right edge of the second level of parking in magenta, which would put perhaps the line of the building above approximately here, and I'm drawing a magenta line just to the right of the word parking four. And that would be a logical place for a column line within any parking garage and would provide also a nice, tidy structural line to bear the structure above. They need to design this. I'm not the designer. They need to prove why they can't design this. They've never, ever done that.
Has there from the record or any of the feasibility analysis, have you seen any sort of intent in order to really design a structure that would work? Let's see here. Oh, and then there was also might have been Mr. Miller or somebody else, but said that the concrete edge of a parking structure was not necessarily aesthetically pleasing. Do you have any response to that?
If it's like any other facade of any other building, they have to render it in such a way. And what I mean by render is, apply fenestration and facade modulation and materiality and all kinds of considerations that we make as architects. I'm not going to try to pretend that parking garages are inherently more attractive than residential buildings might be, inherently attractive, but it doesn't mean that it isn't almost, it's pretty common, if not universal, in multi-family projects of any size to have these parking garages that they have to manage and deal with aesthetically.
And are you aware of any other apartment projects in the vicinity that are multi-unit apartment buildings that are over under structure parking?
It was just shown the proposal for the building that I believe is just across Dyes Inlet there, received that. And that's exactly what that project is I crossed my 4 stories over structured parking.
And then I think it was also in the applicants, they did kind of a comparison to a couple of other buildings here. Did you look at this at all? This is Exhibit F16.
I did, but I don't remember.
Okay.
So would you mind refreshing my memory? I'm
Yes.
happy to look at the structures to see if I
So this
agree.
is Exhibit F16. This is kind of it's a rent comparison, but they looked at these rent comparables, right? Got Rivulet, Telka, Insignia, and this is PDF page 36, right? And kind of the closest one, it looks like, to this building of these comparables is this Rivulet, which is 0.38 miles away, so pretty close by, right? And it looks like it was actually pretty recently built, right? 2023. And so looking at this building, this Rivulet, it's kind of hard to see from that image, so I Googled it.
Well, even from that image, it definitely looks like there's a podium structure and with residential above.
Right. Okay.
And
So kind of down towards that here, maybe I can zoom in a little bit, but are you able to see where it looks like there appears to be a garage
yes.
under this building?
Yeah. And again, it's an end-loaded garage where it's the entry to the garage is on the narrow proportion of the narrower side of the building, which is a very efficient way. If that is in fact a garage, that's a very efficient way of serving a parking lot. It eliminates cars having to make conditional turns to get in and out of the structure.
And
And
then,
you get a couple parking spaces as a bonus out of that as well.
okay. All right. And so that there we can see on this map here, this rivulet that we were talking about is pretty close by. The North Beach property that we were also talking about previously, another multi-unit apartment building, underbuilding parking right nearby. These other examples that they've provided are pretty far away from this site and this design district, right?
It appears so, yes.
Okay. All right. I want to talk a little bit about the one of the reasons they said they could not do this was because of the exit distance issue. It, would no longer comply with the exit distance requirements. Can you provide a response to that?
So the for them to say it doesn't comply with the requirements is not really a proper way of representing how the code works. What they were doing is utilizing a fairly unusual exception that they found they were able to take advantage of. The code typically wants folks to have more than one way out of a structure in case of emergency, and fire, earthquake, whatever. And they had figured out a way to limit how far somebody has to travel to exit the upper level an upper level unit to get under a code exception to limit it so that there was only one way out of a particular unit. As soon as you provide a second way out, that limitation disappears. So that limitation was based on a code exception. It's not the code is set, it is sort of stated by them. The code makes it so we can only go 125 feet. That is not correct. If they provide multiple egress paths out of any particular unit, they do not have to limit themselves to 125 feet of travel distance.
Okay, and what are some of the ways that they could provide multiple egress out of a unit?
Well, one way is to build communicating or connecting balconies between the stairs that they have. They have multiple stairs. Can't remember if there's four or five stairs across each facade. And if they connect those stairs, then someone had a choice to either go down stair A or stair B, giving them the option to basically relieving them of the 125 foot requirement. I put some, this is a diagram I made showing how communicating balcony would work. The schemes that have been presented that I have access to show that the balcony would be outside of some small windows outside someone's kitchen sink. So there's not a huge, they're not outside people's bedrooms. It's not a huge privacy issue. Then you can either go out your front door down the stair, which you would do 99% of the time, or in case of an emergency, you could, and the stair for some reason was rendered unsafe, you could transverse, you could take the communicating balcony to the neighboring stair and then use that stair to get out of the, away from the structure. And there are rules about how far all these things have to be separated, and I documented that for the benefit of the other architects. But nevertheless, there are design solutions, and 10 minutes of effort on my part really revealed at least one. And I would suggest that, again, the applicant refuses to make any design accommodations to make the project fit in this design district.
Their next argument was that they, if they were to put parking under the building, that it might mean that they need to either scale down the number of units, or lose units or stories. What's your response to this?
Well, I think we kind of covered this earlier, where they don't, because if they do a double loaded corridor scheme, which we quickly showed, they can make the building two stories, which gets back by their own admission, two stories is okay for them to exit out of the building with a single exit. Or they could have more than two stories and provide communicating balconies. I mean, again, that's two ways that they could have the same number of units on this, in each of these buildings on this site, not lose units, over structured parking. They just haven't done their work. They haven't done their homework to show why it doesn't work. I don't buy it.
And I want to get back to one comment that you made about how the opening for the understructured parking being on the side versus the end, on the designs. What is the impact of that? What's the significance?
I think that's a minor point, but I mean, I think they've, for some reason, which I can't understand, have shown on their exhibit of the parking garage they showed yesterday, and I'm sorry, I don't remember that number of that exhibit, but they showed a floor plan of parking. If you want to pull it up, or I can just try to talk through it.
I'm going to try and pull it up here. There are a couple different ones.
I believe it's exhibit A in their pretrial brief.
I've got exhibit B9 here. Let me share it and make sure that we're talking about the same document. One second.
Fortunately, all these exhibit numbers change and I can't keep track.
All right. Are you able to see that? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, there was another one where it was double loaded parking.
Okay, let me see if I can find that one. Current site plan, 25% under building.
Let's start current. Just
current design, maybe it was a hold on one second, might have been. Did you say it was in a brief?
I received it. Feasibility study, final revised with exhibits.
Study report. Is it F14?
Actually, you know, I'm not seeing it here either. And I'm seeing the same way you showed. Maybe I just assumed that that diagram they showed yesterday was an exhibit that I'd received, but now I'm not seeing it.
The final revised feasibility study and report, I believe, is F16.
Okay.
If that's the one that you're referring to on the foundational exhibit record.
Thank you.
That's the cross section that I've been referring to in my diagrams.
Seeing that particular one.
They definitely showed it yesterday. I
Yeah.
in fact, I took special notice of it, so.
Yeah, I recall the only one that I'm seeing is this. Hold on, and I can share it.
I can do my best to explain with the single loaded.
Yeah. All right.
Which is not that.
It also doesn't help that my computer is being very slow at the moment. Apologies. Oh, you got it. Okay. Is that someone? Are you sharing it?
I'm not.
Oh, I think Ms. Jones is. You're muted.
I
Gotcha.
was going to say, is this the one that you are looking for? This diagram here on F16, page 3.
No, it's not. It actually only showed one of the four orange buildings. It was a blow up.
All right, well, we might need to return to that. But so assuming there's a you saw an exhibit where it had two what was it, two rows of parking in
It
it?
had two rows of parking, separated by a drive aisle in the middle.
Okay.
And they showed access to that parking garage from the facades, the long facades that face south, west in these buildings. And there's no reason that I can't discern where you couldn't enter that parking garage on the short end of the building, where, like we saw in that example photograph just a couple minutes ago, which is nice because you then enter right on the drive aisle as opposed to entering next to a parking stall, and entering where parking stalls would actually exist if you didn't have to cross through the parking stalls. You enter at the end of the building, which in this case is the northwest facade of the building, and you enter right onto the drive aisle, and then you can turn left or right into any of the available parking spaces. So you actually gain a couple parking stalls. So that would be a fundamental design decision made with the building this shape, as we saw in the example of that one nearby apartment building.
Okay, great. All right. Now another. I want to turn a little bit. We kind of covered it briefly, but I just want to make sure we cover it fully. The elevator. So the applicant claims that an elevator needs a 6-foot pit, and that he had some difficulty finding shallower options or things like that. What is your response to that? Is it possible to design this building with an elevator pit that does not dramatically that doesn't go much dramatically farther down into the aquifer, or maybe matches the current found proposed foundation level?
Yeah, so standard elevator pits are 4 or 5 feet. They are including, they're saying 6 feet because they're saying their structure or sump or whatever, but that there's already structure that's baked into the thickness of the slab above. So we're not doing apples to apples comparison.
But can you explain that a little bit more? So what do you mean where that it's baked into the slab above?
So if I have a slab, and let's just say that all things considered, it ha with footings and whatnot, it's a foot thick, which is an oversimplification.
Okay, slab being, let's say, the
And the
foundation.
slab is the lowest floor level that's going to be, in this case, where cars are parking, for, and a car sitting on top of that slab. That is that concrete slab that if you drop your groceries, the jar breaks on the slab. That's your slab.
Okay.
It's going to have certain thickness, including the foundations underneath it. And let's just say, for simplicity's sake, it's roughly a foot thick. When you create the elevator pit that's 4 or 5 feet lower, you create a slab underneath that elevator pit. That depth, starts at the top of the slab that you've already built for the rest of the building. So you cut out that slab that's in the elevator pit and effectively relocate it down below. So it's a net zero addition. So the only difference is from the bottom of the elevator, is from the top of the slab in the elevator pit up to the top of the slab of the general floor area, which is 4 or 5 feet, depending on your elevator manufacturer. So to say 6 feet, they're already kind of doubling up on structure that already exists. And it's just bad math. You can't continually double up on all the stuff. And so the way that a lot of their descriptions is written is simply additive without any deductions for costs or impacts or volumes or dimensions that are already baked into the design as is. So there needs to be a deduction for the slab at the upper level, or the main level that comes out when you cut a hole in it, if you will, for an elevator pit. So then the elevator pit is, let's just say it's 5 feet, we're being generous. That's an additional depth there. But the code doesn't require 5 foot deep elevator pits. Manufacturers default to that because it provides lots of benefits for easy maintenance, you know, and the safety margin and whatnot. They're not to be taken lightly or important considerations, but it's not a code mandated depth. And the manufacturers that I researched say, contact your Otis agent, Schindler agent, for pit depths less than the standard, which means we're never going to do it. It means talk to us. Let's figure out what can be done. So I don't feel like they've done that. I don't think they've explored that option. And even at that, the size of the elevator pit is so small with respect to the entire footprint of these huge buildings. You have all kinds of opportunities to locate that elevator pit within the footprint of the building that is going to make it work within thicker areas where the till is thicker, or areas where it's just by inspection outside of the difficult distance to the aquifer. Again, we need to design, and they are not designing, and they're not showing us. They simply putting the elevator in the most difficult spot and say, it doesn't work, and we're done. That's not how you design.
And for these like multi-unit apartment buildings, would an elevator improve the value of the building or accessibility?
It would absolutely improve accessibility. I would think, not a real estate agent, not an economist, excuse me, but elevator service buildings, to me, typically, if I'm going out and renting a space, command higher rents than buildings without elevator service.
Okay. Right. And then speaking of some rents and costs, I want to move to the next argument where they say the applicant claims that the cost per stall would be $60,000 to $80,000 and therefore is just too expensive, and that's why they think it's not feasible. What's your response to that?
So I just felt like from my experience fully admit based on just what I typically hear in the industry, not as a cost estimator, I do not do cost estimating. It seemed like an extremely high number. I found the report by an outfit called WGI that annually does national surveys of structured parking garage costs, and their numbers were far lower than the number the applicant suggested. It was so far lower that it suggested that there needs to be some accounting, if you will, of why their number so far in excess of a reputable company that generates both national averages and provides cost analysis for the area around, for Seattle in particular. It's just, it doesn't stand to reason that their number is 2.5 times the values proposed by this this report.
And they're 60 to 80,000. There wasn't really any detail or breakdown of those costs, whether it's land value or foundation or grading or all sorts of things like that. Is that accurate?
Right. There's no breakdown. We don't know what's included in that. And there are significant costs are already embedded in the building. And this is that additions and deductions issue again.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's about money as opposed to about, you know, volumes of concrete. We already have a uphill retaining wall. That retaining wall does not necessarily get taller because of the presence of the parking garage. The site isn't that is it doesn't cost we've already established everybody totally agrees that we don't want to push the garage deeper, so and we don't need to, so we already have this uphill retaining wall. That retaining wall has to be waterproof. That waterproof's already cooked into the equation. That wall actually has to be insulated so that humans can inhabit the other side of that wall, whereas the garage doesn't necessarily have to be insulated because cars don't need insulation. So that's a cost savings. There's lighting that's already present on the site to light the parking lots. There's the asphalt and the concrete and the base and the concrete curbs and the walkways and stuff like that that is all around the parking lot outside. I'm recently finishing a 10,000 square foot, 9,000 square foot medical office building, brand new in Vancouver, Washington. And the parking, on-site parking for that structure is somewhere close to $10,000 a stall, depending on how you do your math. But that's the problem. Depending on how you do your math, are we including just the asphalt and the striping? Are we including the lighting? Are we including the site grading and clearing that's required to prepare the site to get it ready for grading to for the parking lot to go on top? Because not only do you have to do the rough grading, but then you have to do the fine grading, which all of that would not have to happen, or very little that would have to happen if you left that area landscaped, even though you were landscaping it. That is a very different grading process than preparing grade for vehicle and fire truck traffic and all that other kind of use. So my number of 10, maybe as much as 15,000, if I included all the retaining walls that we had on the site in Vancouver, which might not be on this site, is something that needs to be deducted from their parking garage value because it's costs that they don't have. It's not a small cost. Those parking lots are very expensive.
Just to clarify that Vancouver project, you're talking about surface parking. Right?
Yes, that is surface parking.
That's not under building parking. So the idea being that if you put parking under the building, that's surface parking that you don't need to provide. So those costs need to be deducted from the estimate.
In this case, yes. Okay. You know, they would absolutely replace surface parking that is currently part of their scheme with underbuilding parking.
Okay. So there are the deductions for the things that they're the baked in costs already for the building, right? The foundation, the retaining wall, but then also the deductions for surface parking that they wouldn't need to put elsewhere, right?
Right. And going back to the pro forma, the developers should have seen that this was a requirement of the Silverdale Design Centers. It says parking will be located underneath the structures where feasible. And so the feasibility does not have anything to do with cost, because cost is always going to be a factor with building structured parking. Therefore, they wouldn't have included in the SDS if they thought, oh, we can't include it for cost, because as Mr. Examiner pointed out, if it's not required here, where is it required in the waterfront district? You if you say cost is a reason why, cost for a standard structured parking is a reason why it's not feasible, it would not be feasible anywhere in the design district.
Okay. And we might have already covered this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, the applicant points to this is a certain type of housing, right? They want it to be affordable housing or hit a certain price point. Is there anything in the Silverdale plan or design standards that specify preference for certain types of housing or that certain standards don't apply based on the type of housing that you're constructing?
No, in fact, the design standards refer to quality housing as the guiding principle for housing. It's not affordable. The word is quality housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's referred to a couple times in, I believe, chapter two.
Okay. And even if this were, you know, let's say they do a slightly, say they have to go three stories instead of four or a slight reduction in units, that would still result in a significant increase in housing within the urban growth area, right?
Yes, this is a large project. So taking a floor off each of these buildings still has four buildings with a lot of units in it.
So it would still be a large project and still result in significant housing in the area, right?
Yes.
Okay. In I believe it's might have been the brief, or the applicant argues that applying the design standards for underbuilding parking would thwart an allowed use here. Is that the case? Would requiring putting parking under a building just thwart all multi-unit residential housing in the waterfront district?
No, I mean, even though they claim this is an waterfront property, it effectively is. The de facto reality is that the views across the neighboring zone are basically protected. Its unique location and the length of the parcel, the length of the parcel, when you look at the zoning map, is a significant percentage of the entire length of the waterfront district facing the inlet because of the long shape, narrow shape of this parcel. So this is the a piece of land that has exceptional views and access to the mountains and the water, which was something that was called out in the design standards as a characteristic of the waterfront district. So the presumption is that they're going to be able to do well on rent. But again, I'm not a real estate agent, so I'll leave that for someone else to find about.
And then I just want to make sure that we kind of covered all of your exhibits that you prepared here. So I also want to just pull up, this is exhibit A8, and it just shows another kind of version where it's only a single level of parking under, right? I think you prepared two where there was both one and two.
Right. Yeah. So that's
two.
That's just two levels of parking with an elevator tucked in above all of the impact lines that would allow for, especially if they entered off the ends, or at least one end, they'd allow for 56 parking stalls. And the next one, in rough numbers, we might have to add or subtract a stall or two when you actually design it and lay it out. And then the next one shows how you can have kind of a centralized elevator if they wanted the elevator more in the middle of the building and still make it work and get parking for 40 cars. And that would be one car per unit, which is there is a lot of market, as I understand it, for one car per unit type of housing. So
mm-hmm.
pretty common.
And this scheme that you show here would still the first floor units would be at grade, right? So those would be easily accessible from the.
Yeah, the first floor units in that scheme are at grade.
Okay. And have you seen projects where there's parking under the building, but then, you know, maybe there's adjacent parking nearby, just not quite as much?
Sure.
Surface parking. There could be a combo of both under building and nearby surface.
The photograph I showed earlier of the apartment building in my neighborhood has that arrangement.
Okay, and then I just want to pull up, you prepared a couple of renderings, kind of showing some of the different versions or the layouts here. Can you walk us through what we're looking at here?
So
this
those
is
are
exhibit A6 at PDF page one.
Those are massing studies of the existing scheme or the original proposal. It's done in red. There's four bars. There's the tall parapet wall on top of each of these bars. There's a clubhouse structure in front, but that's just a volume. It's not representative of the shape of the clubhouse because we're not talking about that today. So this shows kind of the arrangement of the buildings in the current scheme, basically sitting on the site, with the lower floor, as we learned yesterday, is half buried underground.
Okay. And then here, this is PDF.
It shows the same, the applicant's same original proposal, simply placed on top of a podium that would support approximately 40 cars.
Okay. But that is that with the scaled down parapet?
No, it's actually with the full, excuse me, look. Yeah, that does have the scaled down parapet.
Okay. And then this here.
This was the scheme that the applicant proposed, where they said, we're going to make the double loaded corridor scheme. So you can see how much lower the original proposal was shown for reference in that blue color as a profile. You can see how much lower that scheme would be. I recognize the conversation about the design standards say taller than wider. However, I will note that the proposed scheme is, depending on how you look at it, in blue, is both wider and taller than the red schemes I've showed of the double-loaded corridor schemes. So largely, is this to demonstrate that, hey, if we actually sat down and we could have these conversations about shapes of these buildings and how to distribute parking on the site, we'd probably end up with a much better project at the end of the day.
And with this design here, this alternative, would that better enable views from other properties, the properties north of it, the restaurant that relies on the views to the northeast?
It's hard to say how well off the restaurant would be, but we have to remember there's the entire waterfront district that's basically to the north of this site. This site, as we've talked about in both the previous hearings on this project, covers an inordinate amount of frontage in the waterfront district, and all of those properties to the north and to the north east of this site are going to benefit from lower buildings in terms of preserving the mountain and marine views, which is part of the design guidelines.
And would this design also provide a greater kind of distance or buffer between the proposed apartment buildings and the residential homes to the south?
You can see how the blue versions gets a lot closer to the properties to the south. And it would be certainly possible to locate Maynard's restaurant on the other side of this if you wanted to, and create a purpose-built view corridor between these buildings one of the things you can't see, and I apologize, I didn't think about it until now, is that the clubhouse is just behind the blue structure. So the Maynard's building could have a view corridor around the clubhouse, for example, and the clubhouse could be located in any one of these eight slots. So, you know, with some reasonable effort, a little bit of effort and some forethought, the folks in Maynard's could have their views protected as well across this property.
And then by also putting all the parking, you know, under the building, it does that open up more open space for residents?
Yeah, it does. The applicant correctly pointed out they might have to provide some access roads around these buildings for fire safety and whatnot. Don't deny that that might be the case, but you know, you can see how much green area is still available.
Notes. Okay. Do you have, is there anything else that you'd like to address? Any, you know, response to previous testimony, or any kind of concluding thoughts you'd like to provide?
Well, I heard some things saying, well, that would be a different project, or that would be, you know, not this project, or that would be not what we're doing. Or, and I think we should, the examiner should reject that type of argument, because they've never demonstrated, they've never provided the documentation to show why what different project wouldn't work. They're simply trying to continue to ramrod the same project over and over again in terms of parking, and frankly in all aspects of this building, but in terms of parking for today's testimony, they continue to just, you know, force that issue that this is the only way to do this, and they have not shown that. And then when they do show why, in response to, you know, diagrams we've created, why it doesn't work, they provide illogical answers and answers that just state the worst case. They're very alarmist. They just say, this is how bad it is. We have to have 3-foot foundations. They didn't, even though they brought a structural engineer on, they didn't run through why the math of that works to anybody's satisfaction. They don't provide a reasonable accounting of all their costs, of all the structure that's in place already, the spatial accounting of the volumes that they've already are dealing with, or the accounting, or the spatial relationships to the how deep they're pushing the building. They haven't shown the soil profiles across their cross-section diagram, or at least I can't discern that. And then they seem to have factual errors in their argument about how thick things are and how tall things are and how wide things are. So I don't think the notion that that's a different project is correct. We always design a variety of solutions as we work through any architectural problem. There are no easy sites anymore. As far as easy sites go, this is one of the easiest sites I've ever seen. It's the one that creates a lot of opportunities for them to create good design solutions. And they seem to just, nope, this is the project we're doing. We're doing garden styles, and that's all we're doing. And there does not seem to be any willingness to provide for a real, you know, considered effort, design effort, and conversation about how to design a better project for this location.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Adams. No further questions.
Mr. Examiner, you're muted, I think.
Yeah, that was a good time to, I think, take our break. Otherwise, we just go for over 2 hours straight. So let's take a break till 4:05. We'll see you then.